Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Well, every so often we do put on some of our programming from our sister station, the Radio Theater Channel, that plays the old-time radio shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's something you should really check into. It's at oldtimeradiolisten.com and a few other places, but check us out there at oldtimeradiolisten.com. So this time we're going to play an hour of our programming on that channel. We will have an episode of Suspense, which starts off each daily broadcast on the Theater Channel. That'll be followed by Superman and Ma Perkins, so give it a listen. And if you like it, by all means, join us at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
This is the Radio Theater Channel. Now it's Suspense. Next, it's Superman and Soap Time on the Radio Theater Channel.
Now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world, Roma Wines presents Suspense.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Vincent Price and Mr. Lloyd Nolan as stars of Hunting Trip, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear.
It began with just a little hunting trip for the two of us, Eric and me. I hadn't seen Eric for several months, since before Karen died, in fact. When I bumped into him at the club, he suggested that we run up to his cabin in the mountains for a few days, grab a bit of fresh air and relaxation, see if we couldn't bag ourselves a moose or a deer. And yet, almost at the outset, I had an uncanny feeling about that trip. Actually, it was the night and the setting. It was the blackest night I'd ever seen. We'd left all humankind behind us. There was no moon. There was only blackness, the kind that seemed to be all enveloping, as though there was nothing outside our car but blackness. No road, no forest, no mountains. I'll admit I was nervous. I was boring my feet into the floorboard of the car, as though somehow that would help. What are you laughing at?
You, Stan. You don't look as though you're having a very good time.
Well, I'm not. Frankly, shouldn't you be driving a little bit slower?
Why?
Why, good heavens, Eric, if you make just one little slip at the wheel, we're done for, that's all. I doubt if they'd ever even find us down in those canyons.
Nonsense. I know every crook and turn in this road.
Oh, yeah?
I don't think you're much of an outdoors man.
Well, maybe not. I love this kind of country in the daytime, but I'll confess I'm not so keen on it at night. I don't like what I can't see.
Funny, I'm just the opposite. There's a challenge in the darkness that stimulates my senses. It's exhilarating. It stirs my imagination.
Sure, I suppose it would. But I'm not equipped to grapple with the mysteries of the universe.
Stan, you're much too modest. You always were. You've gotten out of life pretty much what you wanted, haven't you?
Well, yes, I suppose so.
Now then don't always be belittling yourself. It's an effective technique, Stan, but I'm on to you. You're as clever as the next fellow, in your own way.
I sat back and tried to relax. Things weren't quite as Eric had pictured them. I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, as they say. Eric had come up the hard way. I was average and soft. He was brilliant and hard. We'd known each other a long time, going to school together, being in love with the same girl, Karen. When I married her, he was my best man, and yet I didn't pretend to understand him. He was still pretty much of a stranger to me. I glanced over his way. He actually seemed to be enjoying himself. It crossed my mind that he was rather enjoying seeing me in a bit of a lather, too.
Well, Well, it's not far now, just around the next bend.
Well, thank the Lord. Well, am I amusing you again?
No. I was just thinking what a perfect spot this would be for a murder.
A murder? Honestly, Eric, I believe that's all you think about.
It is, almost. When I buy a newspaper, I read about murder the way you study the stock quotations. Murder is fascinating to me. I spend most of my time figuring out ways and means to commit murder.
Now you're trying to sound like a mental case.
Who knows? Perhaps I am. I have a mind. Well, here we are, old man.
Yeah.
You see, I've delivered you safe and sound, all in one piece.
Eric's cabin was perched high on a rocky crag jutting out from the side of a mountain, with one wall flush against a sheer drop. In front, there was a steep path leading down to a lake. I could hear the lapping of the waves. Eric fixed us something to eat, then went outside. And pretty soon, he came back in. Arm full of logs. His face was red and healthy.
I don't think you like my place, Stan.
Huh? Oh, yes, I do. Honestly, I'm just tired, I guess.
Well, we'll turn in directly.
Oh, thanks.
Cigarette?
Yes, thanks. I believe I will.
I like it here. All the privacy in the world.
Mm-hmm. Say, Eric.
Yes?
Why do you read about murder?
Why do you read about stocks and bonds?
Well, because they interest me. It's my business.
My business doesn't interest me. I read about murder because I'm interested in people. Murder is emotional. And when people are being emotional, you get to see more of them.
And why are you so interested in people?
Oh, I think I'm more curious than interested.
Well, all right. Why so curious, then?
It amuses me. I find out about people. I write down what I find out, and I write my impressions of how those people will react to a series of circumstances. It's a good way to get rid of one's inhibition.
Sort of a frightening hobby.
I think stamp collecting is frightening.
You're too darn clever, Eric.
Why too clever?
Well, I mean you see through people.
Well, what's wrong with that? Unless, of course, they have something they want to hide.
Oh, I suppose it's all right, if your friends don't mind.
Do you?
Mine? No, heavens no, why should I?
That's right, why should you? Well, how about hitting the hay? We have to be up early. And we'll only get a few hours sleep as it is.
That suits me.
You sleep in my study, Stan. The bed's in there is a bit more comfortable. I'll bunk out here on the couch.
I had undressed and gotten into bed and was reaching over to put out the light on Eric's desk when my eyes fell on a stack of typewritten sheets. I wondered if they were the notes Eric had been speaking about. The strange mumbo-jumbo he'd written there, phrases he liked, single sentences describing people he'd met. There were a few clippings pasted on sheets of white paper, clippings describing murders, by strangulation, by pistol, by drowning, by poison. The full sheet was devoted to Karen. I hadn't realized how much he'd cared for. His analysis was very kind, almost maudlin. He spoke of his shock at hearing of her suicide. He tried to reason it, to find causes. A small memo pad caught my eye, however. And on the last page, I saw my name carefully printed. I read it eagerly. I read Eric's arguments for not hating me because I had married Karen. I read Eric's cold analysis of my character. Not exactly flattering, but it was pretty accurate. And at the bottom of the page, newly written by the looks of it, and in Eric's own careful hand, I read, "Four ways to commit murder. By strangulation, by pistol bullet, by drowning, by poison."
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Vincent Price and Lloyd Nolan in Hunting Trip by Paul Bernard and Lee Horton. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
I slept that night, but it seemed as though I had only just dozed off. when I heard the door open quietly. I opened one eye cautiously. It was still gray in the room, so I know I hadn't slept long. I was about to open both eyes to save Eric the trouble of waking me when I thought, he hasn't come to wake me. My mind threw two words at me. By strangulation. Before I had the chance to move, I felt his hands carefully on my throat.
Don't!
Why, Stan, what's the matter?
I thought for a minute that...
Yes?
I
guess I must have been dreaming. Nightmare.
You grabbed hold of my hands like you thought I was going to strangle you.
Oh, did I?
What's the matter? Have you got a guilty conscience?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I have. What did you want, Eric?
Time to get up.
Oh, already?
Yeah, that's right. I've got good news, too. I just spotted a likely-looking buck right across the lake when I went down for water.
Oh, good, good.
Well, I'll get breakfast going. As soon as you're ready.
Yeah, I'll be right with you.
Now, there's no rush. Take your time. Nice to have you here.
Maybe it was the way that he'd said that, as though he'd really meant it. For a minute, I was convinced that I'd let my imagination run away with me. And as for putting his hand on my throat, that was an accident. He'd been groping for my shoulder. And then the next minute, I was asking myself, was it an accident, though? Suppose I'd really been asleep. Suppose I hadn't grabbed his hands. I still didn't know what to think. Well, I dressed, and we sat down to breakfast.
Pass me your cup, will you, Stan? I'll give you some coffee. There you are.
Thanks.
Sugar coming up.
No sugar for me, thanks.
Well, Stan, when are you going to confess?
What do you mean, confess?
Or shall I drag it out of you?
What are you driving at?
Oh, come now. You're not going to play the adolescent schoolboy with me.
I swear, I
don't... I'm referring to the lovely young woman you've been seen dining with and taking to the theater.
Oh, you mean Marcia.
Is that her name?
Yes.
Well, go on. Where did you meet her? How? When? Is she wealthy? Is she as beautiful as they say she is? Come on. Let's have the sordid details.
No, Eric, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Am I?
Oh, I'll admit I've taken her out occasionally, but nothing like that.
Marcia. Do I know her?
No, I don't believe you do.
Isn't her last name Jenkins?
Yes.
Oh, of course I know her. That is, I met her. Well, don't you remember? You introduced me to her yourself.
Oh, did I?
Yes, don't you remember? I ran into you at Silver's. You were buying perfume, and she was helping you select it. For Karen. Remember?
Oh, yes. Now that you recall it...
More coffee?
Yeah, no sugar. Well, when we got to the lake, we bailed out the boat, loaded it, and pushed it out into the fog. It was still half light when we reached the other side, so we sat in the boat and lighted cigarettes, waited for the sun to come up. We'd been sitting there, just smoking, not saying anything, when he suddenly turned to me and said...
You say that she'd been ill.
Karen. Yes. Yes, she'd been ill for some time, Eric.
So she killed herself.
Yes.
There was an inquest, of course.
Well, yes, of course. Why do you ask?
Look at that sun. Did you ever see such color?
Four ways to commit murder. I'd almost forgotten about Eric's hands on my throat. Now the incident jumped vividly back to my mind because now I knew that Eric had a reason. He looked away after he asked me about the inquest. He didn't answer me when I asked him why he wanted to know. Somewhere in that strange, dark corner of his mind, he was still obsessed by love for Karen, even though she was dead and gone. He thought that she'd still be alive and happy if she hadn't married me. My legs were weak when he motioned me out of the boat. A deer blew somewhere near us. We stopped.
Hey, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Listen. It's moving west.
Yeah.
Stan, you work west. Just about half a mile or so ahead of us, you'll come to a clearing.
Mm-hmm.
Take your stand there.
Right.
I'll strike north and west and then work toward the clearing. Good hunting.
This is it, then, I thought. He'll hide somewhere along the way to the clearing and shoot me in the back. Now that I knew what to expect, I felt somewhat relieved. At least I'd be ready for him. until I'd nearly reached the clearing. And then I got the feeling that someone was walking with me, timing his steps with mine. I stopped and listened. I don't know how long I stood there, my rifle gripped in my hands. But suddenly, instinctively, I wheeled around. A shot whistled over my head. Then I saw a buck running across the clearing. He'd shot at me and missed. Well, two can play at that game, I thought. The next shot would be mine. I wouldn't miss. I dropped on my knees watching the brush for him. Then all of a sudden, I saw him running toward me, right out in the open. I started to raise my rifle, but I couldn't. I couldn't kill a man that way in cold blood.
Dan, did I hit you?
Confound you.
Now, hold on a minute, old son. Let's not lose our heads. I'm terribly sorry, of course, but I had no idea you were to take stand in the clearing, so I naturally assumed you were there. I don't know what I can say.
Well, maybe it was my fault. I don't know. Anyway, let's forget it.
But I
said let's skip it. I stuck close to Eric after that. I gave no more opportunity for a shooting accident. It was dusk when we headed back toward the cabin. We didn't get our buck, not that I cared, and I'm sure Eric didn't. He was after a different game. And I saw a boat on the beach. By drowning. Here we were alone. I couldn't refuse to get in the boat with him. There was no other way of getting back to the cabin. I could feel the perspiration trickling down my ribs. I stumbled in the underbrush.
Easy, easy now. Hey, it's too bad we didn't bag that fella.
What?
That buck. Better luck tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah, better luck tomorrow.
You seem preoccupied, Stan.
Do I?
Yes, I have the ghastly feeling that I'm failing you as a host. I don't think you're having a very good time.
I think this is a marvelous country, Eric.
You've exercised phenomenal restraint, old son.
What do you mean?
About expressing your admiration for it. I'd never have suspected that you liked it so much.
That remark called for some sort of an answer, but I wasn't equal to it. Fortunately, I was spared the necessity. We reached the lake and the boat. Then we tossed our guns into it. Eric started to push out for shore.
Hop in, Stan. Easy does it now. Hang on to the oars, will you, while I climb in? All set?
All set.
Splendid. Here, now, you better let me row. I know this lake. There's some treacherous spots in it.
What do you mean?
Oh, some nasty boulders sticking up. Some of them that aren't easy to spot. Come too close to the surface for comfort.
I see.
If we were to hit one of them, we'd turn over in a hurry. You don't swim, do you, Stan?
You know darn well I don't.
Oh, that's a shame. It's a mistake not to learn to swim, don't you think?
What happened after that was a nightmare. He rowed. I sat there, paralyzed. I couldn't move. I couldn't think. I knew I should do something, but what? I stared at the water till I was blind, looking for rocks. Eric's face was a blur. He just smiled, rowed and talked. His voice sounded hollow and unreal.
You're shaking, Stan. Is something wrong? This lake's plenty deep. Lots of fish in it, too. Maybe we can do a little fishing.
He stopped suddenly. He'd seen something in the water. He turned around, pulled hard on the oars. We'd reached the spot, he knew it. And then...
No! No, Eric! No! Eric, for the love of God!
When I came up, Eric was there in the water near me. He didn't speak. He just grinned.
And then I saw his face above mine, grinning. I saw him raise his face, strike me, and that's the last I remember.
When I came to, I was lying on the beach, and Eric was standing over me, smiling.
Well, hello. How are you feeling?
Okay, I guess.
Say, you're a tough customer to rescue, old son. You put up quite a fight.
I'm sorry. I thought
don't try to talk now. You've had a pretty bad time. Take it easy.
Well, it was all clear to me then. Eric had saved my life. It had been accidental. The shot, the boat turning over. He didn't want to kill me. A man doesn't save you from drowning when he wants you dead. But it had all been my imagination, a nightmare. Oh, the relief that flowed through my body was almost too much for me. There aren't words to express how I felt. A little later, Eric helped me up to my cabin, and I stretched out on the couch. Eric went to the kitchen to fix hot coffee and soup. He brought the coffee in first, pulled up a coffee table close to me, and poured us each out a cupful.
There you are. Get some of that into you, and you'll feel different.
Oh, thanks.
I'll be back in a second. Soup coming right up. Hey, Stan, do you like to cook?
Huh?
I said, do you like to cook? You know, I do. I like to try different concoctions.
Oh, not me. I'd starve to death if I had to cook for myself. Oh, man. This coffee hits the spot.
Yeah, I can use a little of that, too. It sure does warm the innards, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I got a little chilled.
Nothing like a cup of coffee, I always say.
That's what I always say, too, Stan.
Did I say something funny? Am I amusing you again?
Immensely. Yeah. In fact, Stan, I think that's probably the funniest thing you ever said.
Mm-hmm. How did you like it, Stan? 4 ways to commit murder. You read it, of course.
Why, yes, I couldn't
tell you had, just as I intended you to. Were you frightened all day today?
I don't understand.
You didn't know, did you, that I came to your engagement party to ask Karen to be my wife. I wasn't aware that you were throwing a party or that she had accepted you.
Oh, good Lord.
Perhaps you don't remember what I told you that night. You thought I was joking, but I meant every word I said. That I'd make you pay if you failed Karen, if you made her unhappy.
But then all these years you would... Then you did bring me up here to...
Murder you? You're so right, Stan.
You pulled me out of the lake. You saved my life.
You're a dull-witted clown, aren't you, Stan? Don't you know me better than that? Did you think I'd kill you in the manner of a homicidal moron? Oh, no, Stan.
But you did take a shot at me.
Oh, yes. That was the second way. The first way was by waking you up by the throat this morning. The boat tipping over was the third way.
And now I suppose we've reached the fourth way.
Your brilliance positively staggers me.
You can't get away with it, Eric.
Oh, yes, I can. I have. You see how intently I'm watching you. I'm waiting to see you fall. You're going to die, Stan, just as Karen died.
What do you mean?
In the coffee, Stan. That's right. Your coffee's poisoned, just as you poisoned her coffee. Only yours is a slow poison. Poetic justice, don't you think?
You poisoned my coffee?
Yes, I wore down your guard. I planned it so that by now you would trust me. You would have... faith in me.
You poisoned my coffee? What?
I didn't drink my coffee, Eric. I changed cups with you. There was sugar in my cup, Eric. I don't take sugar in my coffee, Eric. So I changed cups with you. I didn't mean to do it, Eric, but... I don't like sugar in my coffee.
Well,
So you see, I didn't kill Eric, really. He killed himself accidentally, but I wish he had killed me. He had a good reason to, because somehow he knew about Karen, about how I killed Karen, by putting poison in her coffee that morning. And I watched her die, the same way that I watched Eric die. I'm tired now. I don't want to talk anymore. You do whatever you want with me.
The home of radio's best comedies, dramas, westerns, and detectives. This is the Radio Theater Channel.
Presenting the transcription feature, Superman!
Up in the sky! Look!
It's a plane!
It's a plane! It's Superman!
And now, Superman, strange visitor from the planet Krypton, who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, wages a never-ending battle for truth and justice. When we last saw Kent, he and Jimmy Olsen were being held at gunpoint in the cabin of a foreign agent aboard a ship loaded with nitrate bound from Panama to the United States. With them are two English passengers, Dr. Michael Barrington and his daughter June. The ship is to be sunk at midnight, and as time passes, Kent realizes that in order to save the lives of all on board, he will have to assume the role of Superman, even though it means revealing his double identity. Then suddenly a ray of hope gleams. Young Pug Flanagan, forgotten in the excitement, has gone to the captain with a report that Kent and Jimmy are missing, and that something strange is going on aboard the ship. But the foreign agent, leaving his henchman Hans to guard our friends, has followed Pug to the captain's quarters disguised as an elderly lady. Listen.
What's that?
Someone is knocking at the door.
Good evening, Captain.
Buenas noches, senor.
Oh, there you are.
Oh, me?
Yes. We have been looking for you. We are having a little party in my cabin. Mr. Kent is there and Jimmy.
Well, I'll be.
We sent one of the waiters to find you, but he said you refused to come.
You see, it is nothing at all.
You mean to say Mr. Kent and Jim are in your cabin?
Uh-huh. We are having a lovely time. Won't you join us?
Oh, sure, but why didn't the waiter tell me instead of getting tough?
Oh, he probably didn't understand.
Doesn't make any sense to me, but I suppose it's okay. I'm sorry I bothered you.
It is not.
Good night, Captain.
Buenas noches, senora. Buenas noches.
Mr. Kent and Jimmy will be very happy to see you.
How long have they been in your cabin?
Oh, just a short time.
Ain't it kind of late to be holding a party?
Oh, no, not on board ship. We plan to have a big blowout at midnight. A very big blowout.
Sounds like a storm coming up.
Yes, it does. Now, I must be careful going down these steps. I'm not as young as I used to be.
I'll help you, lady.
Oh, thank you.
Just take it easy. That's it.
Oh, you're a perfect little gentleman. There we are. Well, my cabin is at the end of this corridor.
Wait a minute.
Why, is something the matter?
Yeah, plenty. You ain't no dame.
What do you mean?
Just what I said. You're just wearing them clothes to make out you're an old lady.
What in the world are you talking about?
Listen, I wasn't born yesterday. I had to hold your arm coming down them steps. You've got muscles like a man.
And I know how to use them, too.
Let go of me.
Not this time.
Oh, no.
Ow. Keep me, will you?
Yeah, and here's another one.
I'll fix you. Stop.
Two guys like you could hold me.
Now come back here. You won't get away.
That's what you think. Try taking me in a skirt. Go ahead. Try.
When I get my hands on you.
Don't make me laugh.
Got away. He was right. Can't run in this outfit. Well, it just means speeding things up a little. Hans, open.
You found him?
Close the door.
Well?
I found him, but he got away.
Oh, boy.
You won't be so happy in a short while. Go up on deck, Hans. Keep a sharp lookout. He won't wait until midnight. I will make contact immediately and tell them to come ahead.
What is your hurry?
The boy knows I'm not an old woman. Every minute counts. Give me that gun.
You're having a chance now. You'd better give up.
When I need your advice, Mr. Kent, I'll ask for it. Until then, keep your mouth shut. Go ahead, Hans.
Yeah, I go.
Now I want to warn each one of you that from this moment on, I'm a desperate man. If I fail in this mission, my life means nothing. So you see, I have very little to lose. Good move. If you do, it will be the end for all of you.
But even as the message that will hurry the doom of the ship and all on board crackles through the air, Hug Flanagan, having made good his escape, realizes that the situation calls for quick action. Unwilling to trust even the captain, he has equipped himself with a length of rope and is determined once and for all to find out whether Kent and Jimmy Olsen are being held prisoners in the cabin of the bogus old woman. Clutching his coil of rope, he slips silently to the deck above the cabin, reaches the rail, and leans far over.
That's the porthole right below. I see it lit up. All I gotta do is tie the rope to the railing, shinny down, and take a look. I wish this tub wasn't bouncing around the way it is. Oh, I better hurry. That storm's gonna hit us soon. There, she's tied enough. Can't take a chance of her slipping. Because if she does, I'm a dead pigeon. Okay, Flanagan, over you go. Wow, almost lost my balance that time. Gotta be careful. Maybe I better tie the end of the rope around my middle. Just in case. Yeah, that's better. Now to shinny down to that porthole. Wind's blowing. Can't hear me. This is gonna be a cinch. Just a couple of feet more. Hey, wait a minute. The porthole's open. I don't want to stick my foot through it. I better slide over a little. Yeah, that does it. I hope nobody spots me when I look into the porthole. Gotta be careful. Easy now. Easy. Holy smokes. There's Mr. Kent and Jimmy and that white-haired guy and his daughter lined up against the wall. And that phony dame's got him covered with a gun. What will I do? I can only bust the light and give Kent a chance to stalk him in the dark. Yeah, but how am I going to do it? I know. A rubber band and a nail. It's just as good as a bean shooter. It'll be tough shooting if hanging on to this rope. But I think I can do it. Up you go, Flanagan.
While Thug climbs back up the dangling rope to go in search of a rubber band and a nail, the atmosphere in the cabin of the foreign agent grows more tense by the moment. Facing what he believes to be certain death, Dr. Barrington maintains a stony silence as he watches his daughter's wan, pale face for some sign of her cracking under the strain. Even Jimmy, accustomed to danger, seems to have given up hope. Only Kent is alert, for he realizes that unless a miracle happens, he will soon have to reveal his true identity and take matters into his own hands. Outside, the wind howls past the open porthole as the ship plows through a heavy sea to its doom.
The storm's gonna break soon, Mr. Kent.
Sounds that way, Jim.
I wonder what happened to Pug. I think by this time he'd have notified the captain.
Don't waste your time thinking about it.
I bet he didn't get away. I'll bet you did something to him.
Perhaps. What difference does it make?
It makes this difference. Thus far, all you've done is threaten the lives of innocent people. But I warn you, if any harm comes to that boy, you'll suffer for it as you've never suffered before.
Wouldn't you call that rather an idle promise? With you in the position you're in?
I won't be in this position long.
Your confidence is very refreshing.
It's beginning to rain.
Yeah. Would you mind closing the porthole? Miss Barrington is getting wet.
Not at all. Oh, I see. It's just a ruse to divert my attention for a moment. Close it yourself if you wish. No, wait. On second thought, I think it should remain open. Yes, leave it open. I may want to look out in a hurry. A little rain won't hurt Miss Barrington. She might just as well get used to being wet.
How much longer have we to wait?
Not long. 10 or 15 minutes.
Then what?
Then I leave you to your prayers.
I haven't bothered to ask, but I assume the plans are to torpedo the ship.
Your assumption, Mr. Kent, is quite correct.
Don't you think it would be the decent human thing to do to permit passengers and crew to get away in lifeboats?
Unfortunately, that is not possible. There must be no survivors to tell how the ship went to the bottom. That you can well understand.
I can understand only one thing. That men like you don't deserve to be called human beings.
You seem to forget one thing. I gave you ample opportunity to avoid being a part of this. I warned you once before we sailed and once after. What more could I do?
What about Dr. Barrington and his daughter?
They are enemies.
It's no use, Mr. Kent. It's no use talking to him. Poor Pug. I'm sure something happened to him, or otherwise he'd have brought help.
Easy, Jim.
Only 10 more minutes.
Stay right where you are, Mr. Kent. Don't move.
Now listen, I don't know your name and I don't care to know it. But I'm giving you one more chance to act like a human being. What you do with this ship is none of my business, but what you do with the people on board is my business.
I'm warning you, Kent. Don't try anything.
Look, someone's at the porthole.
Down on the floor! Get down!
Orange tongues of flame stab the sudden darkness of the cabin, darkness that enables Clark Kent to become Superman and hurl himself bodily at the armed agent. But in a momentary lull in the storm, the sound of shots reaches the ears of Hunt, standing at the ship's rail. Alarmed, he runs along the deck, only to stop short when he reaches the spot where a rope has been tied to the railing.
What is this? A rope dangling over the side. Someone climbing up it. Good thing I brought the flashlight with me. Ah, it's that skinny kid. The one who got away from me. You, boy.
What?
Don't bother climbing any higher. I'm going to cut the rope.
No.
And when I do, you will drop into the sea.
Please.
Too late, my boy. There it goes.
Help.
Hug's plan to shatter the light bulb and throw the cabin into darkness seems to have worked, but at a terrific cost. Can Kent, even as Superman, save the courageous boy from the dark, storm-swept sea? Don't forget to tune in next time for the thrilling conclusion of this story with Superman.
Tune in the next thrilling installment of the transcription feature, Superman.
Up in the sky, look!
It's a bird!
It's a plane! It's Superman!
You're right. It's white. It's that new Oxidol white.
Yes, new Oxidol is white, and it washes clothes whiter than ever before. No other soap in the world can give you a cleaner wash. Oxidol's own Ma Perkins.
You're right. It's white. It's that new Oxidol white.
Now, starting today, your clothes wash whiter than ever before with sensational new white Oxidol. The whiter, whiter soap for a whiter, whiter wash. Yes, the whitest wash in Oxidol history. You'll be amazed. With new white Oxidol, you'll see all your husband's shirts, all your sheets and napkins wash so white you're bound to say...
You're right. It's white. It's that new Oxidol white.
Yes, you're right. When you use this new white Oxidol, it gives you the cleanest wash it's possible to get from any soap in the world. Now, whatever the weather, even when you dry your clothes inside, you'll get the whitest Oxidol wash you've ever had. And that amazing new whiteness stays in your wash as long as you use new white Oxidol. Stays for the life of your clothes. And as for colored washables, shirts, and cotton prints, and blouses, well, just see how they sparkle. New white Oxidol is truly safe. Washable colors come out brighter. So try new white Oxidol. When you see the brilliant white wash, the beautifully bright wash it gives you, you'll make it your wash day soap from now on. And your dealer has it now. Ask for it. And next wash day, be right. Get clothes white with new white Oxidol. The greatest Oxidol Procter & Gamble ever offered. The whiter, whiter soap for a whiter, whiter wash. And now for Ma Perkins. Well, it looks as if all's well that ends well. Willie is safely returned to the bosom of the family. Miss Sybil Erbach is leaving Rushville Center to pursue the artistic life as a commercial artist. Evie is more like a bride than a matron, rejoicing at having her Willie again, and... Well, all in all, there are just no clouds on the horizon. And when we left the folks yesterday, they were all thanking Faye for a lovely party to celebrate the happy turn of events. Well, it's the next morning now, about 10 o'clock. And down in the lumberyard office, Shuffle and Willie are... Well, listen.
I think we can figure it out this way, Shuffle. How many were we? 8 people?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what do we have? Some took lobster, some took chicken. That's at least $3 a plate.
8 times $3 is $24 right there.
Yeah, do you think a second cup of coffee is extra? Joint like that, a second cup of coffee is probably a dime.
Well, these days, a second cup of coffee is a dime any place.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think in a private club they charge for the second cup, Willie. It goes in with the rest of the meal.
Okay, let's say $24 to begin with. And then, of course, there's the tips. Wait a minute. Oh, here's Ma. Ma, what did you have at the country club? Chicken or lobster?
At Faye's party?
Yeah.
I had lamb chops, Willie. Why? They were small, but good.
Well, me and Willie is trying to figure out how much the party cost Faye. With tips and all, couldn't be a dime less than $30.
Oh, including the flowers, it was more. She had them flowers special.
Well, the table sure looked beautiful. Carnation over 30.
Gee, over 30 bucks. But I certainly must say it was nice. One of the nicest little family parties I was ever at.
Did you really like it, Willie?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell Faye? She'd love to hear you say so.
Well, I did tell her when I was saying goodnight.
Well, Ma means you should call up Faye special. Well, I certainly had me $30 worth of fun. It was worth every nickel to see Willie throwing his hip bone out of joint trying to keep up with Miss Sybil Erbach during the rumble.
Oh, that dame. And that feather of hers tickling my nose.
Well, I reckon it was extravagant to say, but on the other hand, she wanted to. And we had so much to celebrate.
Yep. We had the fact Willie and Nebby ain't slugging each other no more.
Also, we wanted to do something for Miss Erbach. She is such a sweet soul.
Faye also wanted to entertain Mr. Grayson.
Plus the fact that Faye can afford $30 once in a while. A nice party like that lasts for years and years in your memory.
That lobster I ate lasted until this very minute. Got a sensation of pressure right here.
Try some baking soda, Willie.
I did. I think it's the baking soda that's giving me the pressure.
Try some more lobster.
All right, we can dispense with the humorous remarks. Speaking serious, Ma, wasn't that Faye's main reason for giving the party so as to have a nice evening for Mr. Grayson?
Oh, it was just one of the reasons. But I think that Mr. Grayson had a real nice time.
Well, he's a real friendly type, that Spencer Grayson. Too bad he lives so far away. You figure Faye likes him a lot, Ma?
Now, maybe we've talked enough about Faye's party, Sheffa.
Well.
And excuse me, why, look who's here.
Well, tarnation, Evie and Miss Sybil Erbach.
Hello, everybody. Greetings, greetings, greetings.
Well, hello. What are you two doing together? Are you taking art lessons, Evie?
Dear Mrs. Fitz met me in the bank, and when I told her the news, she just insisted that we fly over here. How are you, my friend? Wasn't that a simply divine affair last night?
That's the word we left out, divine.
Yes, yes, we all had a real good time, Miss Erbach. Here, sit down.
You too, Evie.
I went into bank, and who should I bump into but Miss Erbach? And one word led to another, and then the news come out. Guess what, everybody?
Wait a minute. What was you doing in the bank, Evie? How much did you take out?
It so happens, Mr. William E. Fitz, that I happened to... Why... I wasn't taking nothing out of the bank, Willie. I just stopped by to tell Augustus to tell Matilda we'll be over to play hearts tonight.
Oh.
But listen, Miss Erbach got news.
I hope it's good news, Miss Erbach.
Oh, I hope so, too, Mrs. Perkins. I've gotten my old apartment back in Greenwich Village, you know. That's in New York. And I'm leaving town tonight. And, oh, I'm so busy packing.
You're leaving tonight?
Huh? Yes, she is.
Carnation, Miss Erbach. The old town won't be the same without you.
Ain't that exactly what I said, Miss Erbach? Rushville Center just won't be the same without you.
You're taking the eastbound flyer tonight? Why, Miss Erbach, it hardly gives us time to say goodbye to you.
I know. Oh, I plan to make the rounds as soon as I finish my packing. All my dear friends here.
So, you're leaving town. You're going to go to be an artist.
Yes, I am, William. And I'm very glad that I can say this to you before all your dear ones. You must continue, William. You must practice, observe, paint and paint and paint. And perhaps someday, your silver ship of dreams will come in, too.
Well, it's very nice of you, Miss Erbach. Maybe you should practice, too.
Now, Willie, Miss Erbach is being very nice. Well, Miss Erbach, we certainly wish you luck. And we certainly want to thank you for everything that you've done for this family.
Oh, I'd do it for anybody, Mrs. Perkins. But it was an especial pleasure to do it for this family. And hasn't bread cast upon the waters been returned? If you hadn't introduced me to dear Mr. Spencer Grayson, why, I'd be hopelessly locked into this treadmill. And now I'm free. Oh, dear Daddy used to say, you're like a little bird, Sybil, a dear little dicky bird, flying up in the sky so blue, free. Really, I half feel like crying. I'm so happy. God bless you, dear. Yes, God bless you, dear. And you just go to Greenwich Village and stay there where you belong. I mean, where you're free and happy. I shall, I shall. And when will all of us meet again? Perhaps never.
Well, bear up, Miss Urbach. I'm going to bear up. Did your daddy ever say anything about bearing up? Remember his words.
Oh, I know that as the train takes me onward to my destiny tonight, my first thoughts will be of all my dear ones back here. Well, you're all invited to the station, and now I'm afraid I must run. Dear Mrs. Perkins, I hardly know what to say. You drop us a note and tell us how you're getting on, Miss Urbach. Oh, I shall. Dear Mr. Chauffeur.
Watch out for them frustrations on the unconscious with the psychology on the top, Miss Urbach.
In Greenwich Village, in my own little circle of creative talents, in the fiery crucible of the great world of art, how could I ever dream of frustration? Goodbye, Mr. Chauffeur. And as for you, William, dear.
Stay out of contests for 12-year-old children, Sybil.
And may I suggest the same to you? Goodbye, William.
Okay, Sybil. Good luck.
And good luck to you. Dear friend, I'll walk you back to your place, Sybil, and I'll help you pack, too. I don't have to be back. The house will almost noon. Goodbye, all. I'll see you tonight.
Bye.
Bye.
I shall bear thee forever in my heart.
We'll never forget you, Miss Urbach.
Goodbye. We're all going down to the train tonight to see her off. Willie, you in particular. It would be very nice if you took her a box of candy.
Well, she didn't have to rub it in that she's going to go to be an artist.
You're just self-conscious, Willie. Debbie sure shined up to her now that she's leaving town. Well, then Mr. Grayson will leave. I believe he's leaving first thing in the morning, ain't he? And the whole story of Life Among the Artists will be a closed book.
Miss Sybil Urbach always stood for the right thing. You know, thinking back on it, Miss Sybil Urbach never said one single thing wrong in all the time that we knew her. And she did help Junior.
Yeah. How about that contest for kids she stuck me in? Incidentally, Ma, I've sent back that money. I mailed it back last night.
Oh, well, that was nice, really. Oh, that contest was just an accident. What Miss Urbach said about child psychology was very true. When a child gets into trouble, the idea is to be sympathetic, find other outlets for his energy. In getting you interested in painting, really, and getting Evie interested in ballet lessons, it did you more good than harm. You know, I'll be sorry to see Miss Urbach leave. She's a very sweet soul.
She sure dances a real energetic rumble. Well, everything's worked out so good, I won't disagree with you, Ma. I reckon that if Sybil Urbach has got any fault, it's that she's too enthusiastic. Like, insisting that Willie here was a genius just because his head's on crooked.
Now listen, I want no more genius talk. Once and for all, Shuffle, I never said I was a genius. So will you forget it, please?
Okay, Willie. Will you forget it?
Yes.
There's them orders from Mr. Boswell. I reckon we're back in the lumber business. At last. You're right. It's white. It's that new Oxidol white.
You've always been proud of your Oxidol wash, but now your clothes will wash whiter than ever before because now there's a new Oxidol. New white Oxidol, the greatest Oxidol Procter & Gamble ever offered. It's the whiter, whiter soap for a whiter, whiter wash. Pour some into your hand. See how white this new Oxidol is. But more important, see how white it gets your wash. Dazzling white. New Oxidol white. The whitest Oxidol wash in history. So white, you're bound to say,
you're right, it's white. It's that new Oxidol white.
You're right, it's white. Even when you dry your clothes inside, you get the whitest Oxidol wash ever. The cleanest wash it's possible to get from any soap in the world. And when you see how sparkling bright it washes your cotton prints and blouses, you'll know new white Oxidol is truly safe. So try it next wash day. Your dealer has it now. Be right. Get clothes white with new white Oxidol. The whiter, whiter soap. For a whiter, whiter wash. Well, Miss Sybil Urbach will be gone by tomorrow. And then it's goodbye to Spencer Grayson. But before he leaves, Mr. Grayson asks Faye, but let's hear for ourselves tomorrow. And now this is Charlie Warren speaking for Ma Perkins with Virginia Payne, inviting you to listen again tomorrow to Oxidol's own Ma Perkins. Same time, same station.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.